Sometimes, drinking and driving may not sound like a bad idea, but think before you drink, unless the ER is where you would like to spend your time.
Yeah.
Don't drink and drive, and don't let your friends drink and drive either. This message is a public service announcement brought to you by your friend, 88.1 WMUL, Huntington.
Lord, I feel like I'm dying.
From the campus of Marshall University, this is WMUL-FM, Huntington. Welcome to FC88.1, the only place on the airwaves to keep up with soccer around the world. Are you ready to hit the pitch? Because first kick is next on FC88.1. Here are your hosts.
Good evening. FC88.1, getting us started on Sports Night here on 88.1 WMUL in Huntington, and online, marshall.edu/WMUL on stream number one. Braxton Crisp here, the host of FC88.1, joined by Alec Hodewaddle behind the glass, and Tyler Perley here to my right. We have a full program here this evening, especially as the way soccer has been going recently. A lot of big news in the world of soccer. We'll hit on a couple of things real quick. I think we'll be talking about tonight. Sepp Blatter gets a 90-day suspension from the FIFA Ethics Committee. We're going to have a John Oliver-style hashing out of the FIFA Ethics Committee in a little bit. The Liverpool club looking for a new manager. We'll talk some about that. And the ongoing feud between Landon Donovan and Jurgen Klinsmann. All of that and more. Plus, a little after 6:30, we'll have a trio of supporters of college radio, two graduates of Marshall University, joining us. I'll save that for a little bit later, and we're going to have a bit of a hashing out. I'll give you a little bit of a hint. One of them is a true English Premier League fan. The other two are fans of an English Premier League team for the sole purpose of trolling the other one. I'll leave it at that. Let's get right into it, though, Tyler. FIFA suspends Sepp Blatter for 90 days. One, is that a reasonable good start, or is that just to shut people up for a while?
Honestly, I think it's the best thing right now for the governing body of FIFA, and especially for the Ethics Committee. This has been a long time coming. I think that in these 90 days, there's going to be a lot of things that are found out, and with Blatter kind of out of the way, it's going to allow them to... I mean, certainly Blatter will continue to be vocal in the media, maintaining his innocence, but I think this will allow the Ethics Committee to really, without Blatter being really in the limelight, still sitting on the throne, so to speak... getting him out of the way for 90 days will allow them to really conduct a proper investigation to really see what's going on here.
You bring up the FIFA Ethics Committee. I find it reasonably ironic that FIFA has an ethics committee in the first place. And digging a little bit into that, ironic that they're present and active now. Where were they 4, 5, 6 years ago when the match-fixing accusations started to heat up?
Honestly, it's just kind of what do people cry foul most at? And somehow, you know, this payment towards Platini that has, you know, has gone back, you know, to his time from 99 to 2002, I believe, for his work then, just now getting paid, that they're going to raise Kane over, you know, a couple million euros. I don't quite understand it when you've got, you know, bigger fish to fry, like the match fixing, and the ethics committee were almost silent about that. And so I think that it's almost kind of a joke. So hopefully some things come to light that are bigger than just the misappropriation or wanting trying to figure out why in the world it took so long to give this guy his money. So,
no, all poking fun at FIFA aside, do you think this is finally going to give the governing body, the people who aren't corrupt, however many or few of them there may be, the opportunity to do a thorough investigation without Sepp Blatter sticking his nose in all kinds of business and trying to prevent things from happening?
Yeah, certainly he's going to be pulling strings from the back. There's no getting Blatter out. He's got supporters all over FIFA. But honestly, like, FIFA just needs a complete overhaul. I don't know what that's going to take or what that even looks like, and I don't think it'll ever be an easy solution. But there's just corruption that goes on at all levels that no one really gets to see. So hopefully this is just the dawning of a new age for FIFA, that things start to get turned around here.
And I think, you know, there were some more, I think more warrants were issued a couple weeks ago that really puts the pressure, I think, on FIFA. And I have to imagine Sepp Blatter has to be feeling a good amount of pressure. When you think about it, this guy has been making it a point to not go to some of the biggest events of his organization for fear of being arrested. He didn't go to Japan a couple of weeks ago, a little more than a month ago now, for a big FIFA event. He did not go to Canada to attend the Women's World Cup final. That can be construed in a number of ways. Could be said, oh, he didn't want to go for fear of getting arrested. He didn't want to go because he's kind of a jerk in that way, and that he didn't want to support women's sport, but still the fact of the matter is he didn't attend one way or another. And at least some of the motive in not attending these big things and going and leaving Switzerland and countries that don't have extradition rights to the United States is because he realizes how hot his seat is.
Right, and with the Attorney General arresting, I believe, what was it, 9 top-ranking officials within FIFA in Zurich over the summer. Certainly, Blatter knows that he's not off the radar, that he is not off limits to take in for questioning, to arrest him, as he saw many of his compatriots around him. Yeah,
I think really the only reason he didn't get arrested in that first sweep is they had pretty darn good hunches that he was involved in a lot of this, but they didn't have the solid evidence they needed. And certainly, I'd have to imagine that through interrogation of those people they did arrest and through documents and materials they were able to acquire through those arrests and warrants, that they now have the needed documentation and evidence to warrant an arrest of Sepp Blatter. It's just a matter of time of waiting for him to make the wrong step to get arrested in a country that has extradition to the United States. And I find it interesting, too, that the United States is leading all of this up, particularly because you think about it, it's almost like the United States is almost mad at FIFA because it didn't get a World Cup bid. When you think about it, the country, especially Germany, who hosted the 2006 World Cup, not that I have seen, has been upset with Blatter at all and pledged to be supportive of the United States and this venture at all. You think about it, well, why would they want to do that? They got a World Cup out of it. They got some revenue out of it. I think that's kind of an interesting twist in that there are so many countries that between the European Union and the United States that are have close relations now, and politically and socially speaking, and yet there are a couple of those who are just saying, we're not gonna touch that. And those are the ones that stood to have gains from Blatter's actions, whereas the United States had a bone to pick because it didn't get anything.
Yeah, and same, there have been English officials that have come alongside the United States that have been, putting these charges against Blatter.
And England's been wanting a World Cup for a long time.
Yeah, and they were kind of a shoo-in for the 2018 World Cup, and then the promises went back on. And I think that they have a bone to pick now, too.
Yeah, I think about it, too, is that England certainly has the infrastructure to handle it. I mean, think about the great extent and expense that it took for both South Africa and Brazil to prepare themselves to host the World Cup. I mean, both countries spent billions of dollars building stadiums.
both countries had workers lose their lives building these stadiums. You know, you think about the extent that it took to build the stadium in Manaus, Brazil. They had to float materials up the Amazon River. They had to float cranes and stuff because you couldn't drive there. That's just nuts. And FIFA is going to expect these countries, and partially in some ways finance these countries, to prepare for the World Cup. Yes, I understand the idea that the World Cup, after it leaves, is supposed to leave stadiums and stuff. But there's nobody playing soccer in Manaus, Brazil right now.
No, I mean, that stadium's going to go relatively unused. When you look at cities like London alone, who has how many Premier League teams with stadiums in it?
Three or four at least. Plus, there's Wembley Stadium that's not a home team or home stadium for any particular club.
And then, like, lower leagues beneath that, you've got stadiums for them as well. I mean, just London alone, let alone all the major cities throughout England and Wales and Scotland that could host these games.
It's crazy. I mean, you think about it. Honestly, I think the Brazilians had six or eight locations that they played games in. Well, I can name six locations right off the top of my head. You can play at the Etihad and at Old Trafford in Manchester. You can play at Anfield. That's plenty of big enough venue. You can play at Stamford Bridge. You can play at the Emirates. There's a handful right there. And of course, they would want to bring along, and the FA would certainly want to perhaps use this as a means to improve other stadia across the country. But at the same time, I mean, is it really that difficult? Especially when there's an economic crisis and stuff, and there's not all of that much money to go around. I think it's kind of suspicious, FIFA's action.
It's interesting also, because if you look at Qatar, I remember talking last semester, the places where they're having these stadiums, they don't even exist yet.
Oh, yeah, they're having to build islands out of thin air.
And they're even going to move the World Cup time to accommodate the heat, which, we were talking about EPL, that's going to really screw up EPL's schedule.
Certainly will. And EPL and Bundesliga and Ligue 1 and Serie A
and every
league across the country and across the world, except for the MLS, oddly. And the Mexican League, they play a little bit similar to the same American schedule. Speaking of American, Landon Donovan, the man slighted by Jurgen Klinsmann in the final World Cup bid of Landon Donovan. Landon didn't even make the roster for that trip to Brazil. He has come out and said, if the United States loses to Mexico this coming Saturday, that Jurgen should be canned. Has it gotten to that point yet, or is that the frustration of Landon Donovan coming out?
It just completely goes right in the face of what I believe. I really honestly think that both at the club level and then at the international level, teams have got to give coaches more time. They've got to have more faith. I mean, one of the go-tos as a manager that you look at is obviously Alex Ferguson at United, who built a dynasty out of United. But his first couple years there were rough. He didn't win any trophies. The owners of the team were questioning whether or not he was the right man for the job. But once you get a system implemented and you get guys to buy into that system and you're given time, I really think – and also at the international level, it's difficult because you've got guys kind of a little bit of a revolving door. Yeah, you've got your regulars, but then you've got these other – 5 to 10 guys that are constantly in rotation of, okay, who do we bring in and who do we bring out, and they don't get to play together a whole lot. So maybe partially some of Klinsmann, but you've got to at least bank some of that on the players as well.
And you think, too, about a situation where, you know, there are some times where players get injured playing for their club and they're they're not available for their country in that situation. I know Manuel Pellegrini came out and said in this upcoming international period that Vincent Kompany can join the Belgium squad. He can travel with them, but he can't play. And you end up with situations where club managers are trying to dictate, you know, the international period and saying that some of the star players aren't allowed to play. It's like, does a club manager really have that right to dictate upon that, upon a player?
No, I really don't think so. I think that should be up to the player. I mean, if he gets, it's such an honor to be called up to play for your national squad. And I think that as a manager, certainly you have to look out for the best interest of the team, and you have to put in, your 2 cents to the player and remind him, if you go do these international, you're going to be more fatigued for the club level. And that's one of the things, you speak of the Belgian national team, Eden Hazard, who has had a career without any injury so far, is taking breaks from the first team action with Chelsea. He was left out against the loss against Porto, and he is electing to, play, I believe, I can't remember who Belgium has for the last 2 games, Andorra and somebody else.
It's somebody kind of not a European power, but still their matches have to be played.
Yeah, and certainly he doesn't have to play because they're lesser sides, but he still wants to play. He wants those caps for his national team. So I really think that has to be up to the prerogative of the player.
Yeah, they play Andorra and Israel. That's the last one. And that's going to be a tough one. It's going to be actually going to Andorra, and then Israel goes to Belgium. Anyway, it's still a Mexico-United States match. It's such a huge match. I'll let you all steal on this one as we head to break. Is it too much to say, okay, Jurgen, you got us to the quarters of the World Cup. And if you got us to the World Cup, you got us to the quarters of the World Cup. Didn't win the Gold Cup. And now we lose to Mexico here, our biggest rival. Is that enough? Is that a qualified enough 3 strikes on Jurgen Klinsmann? Think about that. We'll step aside for a break. We'll come back. We'll answer that and have more soccer talk coming up next on FC 88.1.
You're struggling with your mortgage. You think about it all the time.
What are we going to do if we lose the house?
It's time to stop thinking and start dialing. Call 1-888-995-HOPE for a free government program that offers expert one-on-one advice about your mortgage options. We've helped over 1 million homeowners, and we want to help you. Call 1-888-995-HOPE or visit makinghomeaffordable.gov. Brought to you by the U.S. Treasury, HUD, and the Ad Council.
Turner jukes one defender, puts a jiggle on another, and scores in the end zone. Touchdown, Thundering Herd.
Sam is pump fake, 3 for the tie. Good! She got it! Meg Samus will send it to overtime.
3-2, and Foden drives it to the same spot as in game number one. That one is a no-doubter. That might hit a car.
I don't think that's in here as a rejoin.
29 seconds to go. I stand up next to a mountain. I chop it down with the edge of my hand.
Foden golfs under it just a bit, heading out towards left field, drifting toward Tillman. That's caught. That ball just carried out of there. It's like a road outside Columbus. Home run.
Doors underneath. Doors to Wilkerson. Wilkerson with the
The worldwide leader of Marshall University sports coverage, WMUL-FM, Huntington. You're listening to the student broadcast voice of Marshall University, WMUL-FM, Huntington, West Virginia.
Tyler, you're telling me during the break that you wanted to come back to Paranoid by Black Sabbath. Is this a suitable replacement?
Yeah, I think that this will work for now.
Alex? I think it will. Just until
really
we get...
I didn't know you knew what country music was, being from Maryland.
No, my mom liked country music.
Fair enough, then. When we went to break, I went to the FC 88.1 on 88.1 WMUL. I'm Braxton Crisp, Tyler Perley, and Alec Hildebottle joining me. When I went to break, I posed the question, is the 3 strikes of only making it to the quarterfinals of the World Cup, not making it to the Gold Cup final, and potentially losing on Saturday to Mexico, is that a qualified enough 3 strikes on Jurgen Klinsmann to call for his head as being the manager of the United States men's national team?
I can see the fans' concern about it. It is very disappointing. But you got to remember, going back to the World Cup, who did the U.S. not have in that? Landon Donovan and Jozy Altidore. Dempsey did a lot, but it was a lot of the younger guys coming up, too. John Brooks. Guys like him stepping up in big plays. Plus, the U.S.
was in... I don't think Zardes played in that at all.
No, and that was the group of death, too, in the World Cup champion in there. So the U.S. did a lot there. And Bob Bradley and the other one got two World Cups to try. Give him another chance. If he can't deliver anything of value to the U.S. fans after the next World Cup, then I'd say more toward that. But no, I it's disappointing, but Jurgen still, there's still good things with Jurgen.
If you have an opinion on this matter, tweet me at Braxton Crisp, BraxtonCrisp on Twitter. Let me know what you think. Is three strikes of not making it to only making it to the quarterfinals of the World Cup, not making it to the Gold Cup final, and potentially losing on Saturday to Mexico, enough of three strikes to fire Jurgen Klinsmann? Tyler, you're up.
I think that, one, you have to keep in perspective. You got to ask yourself the question, is the United States going to really win the World Cup? Do they have the skill to do that? My initial gut reaction is no, they do not. Now, some would argue we beat Germany, we beat the Netherlands in, was it over the summer, early on in May?
Yeah.
You also have to remember those were B squads of those national teams. They were not the starting 11 that started for the World Cup in 2014. And so
and different
I think,
managers, of course, too, because right. Louis van Gaal now with Manchester United, not with the Netherlands.
Right. And so I think that realistically, the World Cup cannot be a measurement for Jurgen Klinsmann's success as a manager. You've got to look at losing to Jamaica at the Gold Cup. That is a horrendous loss, which the United States should have taken that game, and everybody knows it.
You can almost lump and create a second strike, if you will, on losing in penalties to Panama, not even getting third place in the Gold Cup.
Right, and certainly against Mexico, the United States, you know, quote-unquote, bitter rivals. I think that there has to, you know, Klinsmann has to be, you got to take a hard look at Klinsmann, because if they don't qualify, if they lose to Mexico, they don't qualify for the Federations Cup, and you've got to win, as a manager, he has to win some of these lower level tournaments rather than certainly shoot for glory in the World Cup, but you have to be realistic at the level you're competing at.
I think people might have a bit of a sour taste in their mouths after the World Cup, particularly in the fashion that the United States lost to Belgium. I mean, Romelu Lukaku comes on in an extra time and just blows everybody away. I guess smart call on the Belgians' part, but I don't think you can necessarily crucify the United States. I mean, that was just good management on the part of the Belgians. You know, the United States, okay, I think it's down the left wing, so it could have been DeAndre Yedlin. Could have gotten back more. I mean, but you're sacrificing defense in that situation by playing him right back to begin with. And there's so many things that, and I'm not trying to defend Jurgen Klinsmann here, but I think that that instead of, you know, solely placing the blame on Klinsmann and on the men's national team for some losses, you have to give credit where credit's due at certain times. And I think that is one of those cases. Losing in penalties, that's something you can certainly point a finger at in Panama, not even getting third place in the Gold Cup. But I think Belgium just played a smarter match in that World Cup quarterfinal. As we talk about this as well, and Jurgen Klinsmann and his perhaps or perhaps not losing his job after Saturday's match, one guy who did lose his job in the EPL, Brendan Rodgers, he has been sacked from Liverpool, going after Jurgen Klopp to replace him. Still no confirmation as to that happening or not. But have to ask, was Brendan Rodgers' leash unjustly too short?
I think Liverpool kind of wasn't the same since Suarez left. It's just been a downward spiral since then. They bring in Baratelli. He was irrelevant. Jordan Henderson is named the captain. He got hurt. They got some production from guys like Milner, but then you lose Sterling. It's either Sturridge or Sterling. It gets me confused. Sterling went to Man City, but you still have Henderson, you still have Milner, but these guys have been hurt, so Liverpool's been kind of gimping their way along the season. Don't get me wrong, I'm not defending Rodgers, but he's kind of been dealt a bad hand right now. He hasn't done well with the hand he's been dealt, but still, you can justify some of the defense for him.
Yeah, and the Fenway Sports Group, as an American organization, has an American mindset towards winning. And unfortunately, it's been, 25 years since Liverpool won a domestic trophy?
Something like that, maybe a little more.
Yeah, so I really think that whoever this Fenway group brings in, if he does not produce results immediately, then he's going to get the axe. It's just, it's kind of an American, it's kind of the mentality that's pervaded the Premier League now of if you don't produce immediately and you're not, you know, if you don't, if your system doesn't work right off the bat, then, well, see you later. We'll just get somebody else who might do better than you.
Yeah, and see, what I think is interesting here, too, is that since Rodgers came in, he sells Suarez to Barcelona. You buy Mario Balotelli, he does nothing, so he's kind of out of there.
Same with Andy Carroll.
Yeah. You sell
Sterling.
Sterling to Man City. Ricky Lambert goes to West Brom. Steven Gerrard retires from the EPL, goes to LA Galaxy. And those last three I mentioned are all ones that went this summer. And the only players that were brought in were, and I say only, Christian Benteke, Nathaniel Klein, Danny Ings, James Milner, were four of the seven transfers that Liverpool made. Keep in mind that one of the other ones, Adam Bogdan from Bolton, was free. Danny Ings was free. James Milner was free. I read a report after Brendan Rodgers was sacked saying that the ownership gave him like £120 million or something like that to spend over the summer to bring in reinforcements. And he spent £32.5 million on Benteke, £12.5 on Klein, £29 on Roberto Firmino from Hoffenheim, £3.5 on Gomez. So that's, what, 16 and 29 is 37, and then so $69.5 million. He's been just a little over half of that. I mean, I think there's certain considerations saying there that, okay, we gave you $120 million to reinforce. You weren't really even in the conversation for any of the big transfers at all over the summer. I don't think that Liverpool is ever in the conversation for Memphis. I don't think Liverpool is ever in the conversation when everyone was speculating whether or not Gareth Bale would leave Madrid. And he spent a little over half of what he was given. And got some pretty reasonable players. But consider, okay, Benteke stood out because he was really the only offense at Aston Villa last year. Klein was one of those young kids from Southampton. They're just wanting to unload. It seems like there's like a minor league farm team of sorts for everyone else in the EPL. They just raise them up and sell them. Firmino played at Hoffenheim, had a year. And then Milner, I mean, paying nothing for the guy. And I mean, what can you really expect out of a player who a team is such as Man City that's pretty steeped in money is just going to give you for free?
I think maybe just for the experience that he had with City. And the other thing you lose is, I just remembered, they lost Glenn Johnson too. He went to Stoke. So you lose a leader guy back there that does a lot of great things with the English national team, so that hurt him as well. But I think Milner mainly for the experience, because when he came on for City, he was helpful with the assist and goals, but maybe that was inspiration and help up there for Henderson. But other than that, I really can't think of anything else.
Well, part of the problem is that Rodgers didn't have, you know, carte blanche, you know, authority over the transfers. He had to get the okay from a governing board that was over him. So, and part of Liverpool's philosophy for years has been to bring in mostly young guys that are underdeveloped, kind of like United's philosophy has been for a long time, and develop them while bringing in a couple, you know, guys like Suarez. You know, they were hoping Balotelli would pan out, guys like Andy Carroll would pan out, and you know, the three didn't.
They seem to also be really into bringing in a lot of British players as well. I mean, think about the number of, or some of the foreign guys in their team. I mean, they're few and far between as compared to, say, a Manchester United, how most of the guys are outside from not from England.
And it used to not be that way. I mean, United used to be very, very English-heavy, you know, Welsh, Scottish-heavy team, you know, within the UK. And now they just have gone, you know, a little AWOL from their history and brought in all these guys from other countries. So there's something to be said about that.
So I think we've kind of hashed out how justified or not justified the sacking of Brendan Rodgers was. However, was it too soon? I mean, did they really give him that fair of a chance to get things righted? I mean, you think about in the United States, usually a coach or a manager gets 3 years usually. I say usually because that trend has been going down, and there have been some managers who have been winning who have been getting fired and coaches. I mean, think about the 4 or 5 years ago, Vinny Del Negro, the head coach of the Los Angeles Clippers at the time, leads them to their best record in franchise history. They fire him. Matt Williams from the Washington Nationals baseball club this year was 4 games over .500. They fired him. Are the strings getting too short on managers and too short beyond reasonable expectations?
We live in an age and in a a world that is, I want results and I want them now. And if they're not produced, cut ties and you find somebody else. I think that's just the age that we live in now.
I agree. I think I would have given Rodgers to Boxing Day, like to about the midpoint of the season. And if this was still the case, then you fire him. But I think it's too early, a bit too early.
Well, and I think another reason that they did it was to give Klopp time to if Jurgen or Jurgen, no,
Brendan Rodgers,
no, Jurgen Klopp.
Jurgen Klopp, yeah.
Yeah, Jurgen Klopp, because he's been linked, obviously, with taking over Liverpool. If they bring him in, it gives him time to look at his team and figure out what he's going to do in the transfer window. If you wait until Boxing Day, I would have loved to have seen Rodgers have a little bit more time to right the ship. But you also, I guess they're thinking, whoever they bring in has got to be able to have time to look at the transfer window and see how they can right the ship that way, too.
All right, we'll step aside for another break here on FC88.1. When we come back, we'll talk some more about how things are going in the world of soccer. Hopefully we'll be joined by our guests to talk about the EPL a little bit more. That's coming up next on FC88.1.
1-800-222-1222. 1-800-222-1222. If you think it might be poison, then the first thing you should do is call 1-800-222-1222. Poison is the kind of thing you're not supposed to touch. Old prescriptions, cleaning stuff, or spider bites and such. If you swallowed something bad or think you took too much, call the Poison Control Center hotline. We're the people you can trust.
For poison emergencies or just questions, the Poison Control Center hotline is here 24/7 with the expert help you need. Free and confidential. We hope you never need us, but keep our number by the phone.
1-800-222-1222. 1-800-222-1222. If you think you might be poisoned and you don't know what to do, call 1-800-222-1222.
A message from your Poison Control Center.
So I'm a kid.
I just don't want to know what it would take to make him leave Madrid.
And she's got this little toy she's always playing with all day long. Tap, 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 bloop, bloop. She can't put it down. There it is. Oh, and get this. She even talks to it. Last week, she acted for Chinese. And guess what? Egg rolls showed up. Like magic. Humans have cool toys.
A person is the best thing to happen to a shelter pet. Be that person. Adopt. Brought to you by the Ad Council and the ShelterPetProject.org.
You're listening to the student broadcast voice of Marshall University. WMUL-FM, Huntington, West Virginia.
Back on FC88.1 here on WMUL-FM. Huntington, online, marshall.edu/WMUL. Braxton Crisp, Allie Cotabidal, Tyler Praley joining us here this evening. We're talking some about short leashes on managers, a little bit about the ever despicable, I think, in the minds of many soccer fans, except Blatter. Let's talk some about upcoming games, particularly in the MLS. And before we get really deep into that, I have to give a shout-out where a shout-out is due to ESPN FC's front page. They list the significant scores from around the world, the upcoming games, and there the three featured matches on their ticker at the top. New York Red Bulls against Montreal tonight at 7:30. Vancouver Whitecaps against FC Dallas at 10. And then another match, slated to start at 7:30. Not in the MLS. It's the Atlanta Silverbacks against New York Cosmos. Thank you for recognizing that soccer exists in the United States beyond just the MLS.
I mean, I think just because of what happened in the U.S. Open Cup over the years has, especially with some of these MLS teams like the Cosmos, knocking off bigger clubs, moving up, it's basically telling the world, hey, we exist. Just like MLS is expanding a little bit, telling the world, hey, we exist, these little guys are showing the MLS that they exist.
I think especially the Cosmos is a pretty big deal in American soccer lore. I mean, they've been around for a while, even predating the MLS itself. But two big MLS matches tonight, New York Red Bulls against Montreal. Montreal trying to fight its way into the MLS playoffs. Vancouver certainly locked in, and FC Dallas, one of the top clubs in the West as well. Red Bulls number one in the MLS Eastern Conference. Montreal number six, currently 4 points out of a playoff berth behind Toronto. And the Impact has a game in hand against Toronto, but that won't be the case after tonight. On the Western side, Dallas, the number two team in the Western Conference. Vancouver, the number three team, just a point separating those two clubs. And whichever one does win tonight will take first place in the Western Conference for the time being. Important matches on those sides, particularly for the sake of Montreal, especially of Montreal getting the result that it did in its last match, as it, I believe, had a pretty big loss to Orlando City. That win against Orlando City really would have put them in a better position.
Yeah, I think Orlando City is just trying to continue the momentum it has first game in the first season in the MLS. But at the same point, Kyle Larin is just absolutely on a tear right now. He goes out and has a hat trick, and the way he's playing right now, it's difficult to stop him. But I do agree, Montreal kind of laid an egg, per se, against Orlando City, and against a team like Orlando City, that's a game where you need points. But a big opportunity tonight against a team like the Red Bulls, where you can close in on them a little bit. But you got to give credit to Orlando City, but it was a game Montreal should have won.
Tyler, let's talk to you a little bit about Didier Drogba and the impact he's had on Montreal. I mean, he's taken a team that was in the cellar last year, was pretty far down on the table when he came over, and they're nearly a playoff club now.
Didier Drogba. I love the announcer that says his name like that. I can't remember what his name is.
I don't remember off the top of my head either, but I know what you're talking about.
Yeah, but Drogba has been fantastic for Montreal. I remember back in the day when he was playing at Chelsea and absolutely tearing it up. Just, he was a nightmare for teams up top, and he's doing the same thing that he's always done for Montreal now. He's just causing havoc on the back four, making runs. He is a very, very intelligent player, and I still think one of the best strikers in the world right now. Just the way that he sees the field that other players don't, and the touch that he has in the 18, the clinical finishing that he has within 15 yards is just unreal.
Yes, one of the big complaints about guys like him, Gerrard, David Beckham coming to the United States and playing in the MLS is that, oh, it's just a retirement home for the best European players. But do you think there's still something to be taught and gained for the United States clubs, and that they're teaching the younger players of the United States how to play soccer at the highest level in the world, even though they themselves might not be playing at the highest level anymore, and the Drogbas and people of that matter, they've been there, they know what it's like, they can kind of pass that wisdom along?
Well, I mean, yeah. My first thought was to look back at the 2006 Italian national team that won the World Cup. All of those guys were at least 25 years or older, many of whom found themselves at 29, 30, 31, 32, 33. Lots of experience, and some would say in the twilight years, they went and they won a World Cup. So I think that there certainly is there's wisdom, there's on-the-field wisdom and off-the-field wisdom that you can learn from some of these older guys that have, passed through the gates, so to speak, and, these younger guys can definitely learn from.
I think it's interesting you bring up the Italian national team, because look at a guy like Giovinco right now. He's in his prime, and he's going to be most likely the MVP of the MLS, and this is doing...
Yep, Kai Kamara is.
Oh, well. Yeah, I mean, he's still really doing things for Toronto FC, and Toronto FC was pretty much... Highlight coming into the season, Jozy Altidore. Nobody even thought about this guy. And then he just goes up and has a season that he has. Granted, Toronto's not really in the contention, But it still shows that.
Spot right now. They're in a transfer spot.
Well, that's true, but
But I see what you're saying. It's not like that. Josie has gone up there and has taken Toronto and BMO Stadium by storm. It's really, it's really been Giovinco, and Josie's just kind of there. He can be. I mean, Michael Bradley hasn't played a spectacular season for Toronto.
And then you think about, who was the very first kind of big name signing to come to the MLS, years ago. David Beckham. He comes in to the Galaxy,
did they
win the Cup his first season, or was it the second season?
I think so. And even if they didn't win the Cup his first season, I mean, his impact was immediately noticeable. And I think the same situation here. I don't think Montreal is going to win the Cup this year, but Didier Drogba's immediate impact cannot be ignored and discounted.
He's really put Montreal on the map.
We'll jump back now to the world of the MLS again. Of EPL, as joining us now on FC 88.1 is a gentleman by the name of Tim Ear. You might recognize that name. He is the anchor on 6 o'clock and 11 o'clock news for WSAZ-TV here in Huntington.
Is that what they have me do now?
He doesn't proclaim to be a soccer fan, except for he happens to like Stoke City. Tim, thanks for joining us.
Yeah, the you have to understand that this all started. I'm so happy to be here and so happy to get a chance to do this. This all started. It was kind of like our in-your-face to Dalton Hammonds, a proud son of Marshall, and I'm sure you know Dalton from
yes,
the sidelines at many a Marshall game. And Dalton works here at WSAZ, and Dalton is all about Arsenal. It's all we hear about, Arsenal this, Arsenal that, Arsenal this.
Does he wear jerseys into the stadium?
Of course. Yes, he has the Arsenal jersey. His weekends are carved out around Arsenal. Everything is that, and that's all we hear about. So, and he, not only that, but you have to understand that, like, he'll walk into the sports, we call it the sports lair. He'll walk into the sports lair where Keith Morehouse holds court, and he'll grab the remote control out of Keith's hand, and at his first chance, he's always flipping on Premier, all the time, constantly.
I have to ask you a question, though. Why Stoke? I mean, if you wanted to get on him, because Chelsea's one of the biggest rivals.
Yeah. Well, that would be too easy. We decided, Keith and I decided that we liked Stoke for two reasons. Number one, we like them because their name is cool. I mean, just the whole idea of Stoke City, and then they're the Potters. I mean, you can't get any cooler. The Stoke City Potters, that's cool. And then their logo is beyond cool. So we said, and we realized that, okay, then we started looking at them, and they are very much like, and I dare I say, because I'm a Pirates fan, they are very much like the Chicago Cubs. And that they're just the lovable losers.
Perennially bad, but managed to put together a decent season every once in a while.
I will not call that a broadcast jinx.
So I don't know whether at some point somebody's cow kicked over something and started a terrible fire one year in Chicago. Like, but at the same time, I know that in Stoke, that Stoke on Kent. We need to go visit there. Keith and I need to get the jerseys. We need to keep rubbing it in Dalton's face, and we have the hope and desire that one day Stoke will be much better and be on the map in a much bigger way than Arsenal. Do you think that's possible, Dalton?
I'm not exactly sure. There's a big money discrepancy between the two clubs, but I can totally respect why you would like a team like Stoke. They work extremely hard. Granted, they don't score a whole bunch. They happen to get red carded quite a bit, but it's a good physical style that I'm sure Steelers fan like yourself would enjoy.
Yeah, I mean, it does. They do kind of remind me of a hockey team the way they play. Now here's the thing. This is what happens then. So we started talking about it. It was just all talk at first. Oh, Stoke City, we're Stoke. We want to get Potter shirts. We need to do this. We need to do that. And then I started watching, and it started on Twitter, and I actually started watching action. And then it got to the point where on NBC, I started watching NBC Sports Network to watch when I found out they were on, and then I started watching the highlight shows. So I've become, a reluctant fan, but I've become an actual fan. And I guess I used to play in high school, so I have at least a little bit of knowledge of the game. So,
Now, has Tim or has Keith gotten to that point yet, or is he still too wrapped up in football and basketball season to dedicate as much time to soccer as
Dalton,
you guys have?
Dalton can address that one for you, Braxton.
I'm going to address it. Keith seems more reluctant to accept soccer's rise in this country, but he's very much, as I'm sure you see every night on the news, he's very much into the football aspect. Football with two O's, not
American
football with a U.
Not football, so. Yeah, I think that, but we're working on them, and slowly but surely, what would change the tide, and you guys would understand this, I think, and appreciate it. What will happen is, it will all change when we get Keith on a plane, and take him on a tour of about five cities on a Premier League tour, and that would be fun. You know, when he starts, you know, if he has a cold one in his hand, and he's cheering on the team and singing the songs wherever the local whatever the local song may be, that's when he'll all of a sudden become, and because you can't deny that you'll become a fan with that.
I've got to say, if you would get Keith in a stadium like the Emirates where my beloved Gunners play, if you get him in the Britannia, which is where Stoke City plays, I'm sure he would be the first to hop on the EPL bandwagon, no doubt in my mind.
Yeah.
So what happened on September 12th, where Arsenal welcomed Stoke into the Emirates and won 2-0? Was there a bit of a grudge match rivalry where you sitting on opposite sides of the sports lair glaring at each other?
I believe that was on a Saturday, yeah. If I recall. There was some fun back and forth texting going on. I was watching the game as I always do. Secretly very nervous, because the last thing I want is for Stoke to beat Arsenal like they did last season. I believe Stoke was up 3-0 last year. Arsenal came back to make it close. They still lost. So you can imagine my relief whenever Arsenal was able to get the victory.
Can you imagine that the next time that Stoke manages to knock off the mighty Arsenal? I can't wait. I mean, that may lead us to maybe hopping on the plane and going over and making a trip.
What do you think it would take to get Keith to play a Premier League highlight during one of his new sportscasts?
I think it's impossible.
No, I don't.
Really?
I think if Dalton said, because this is all it would take, Keith, you know, he would say, hey, Keith, look at what Stoke did today. And if Keith would say, you know, our favorite team, because, you know, Keith's a fun-loving guy, and he would say, you know, for all you soccer fans out there, or just at least Premier fans out there, check this out right here. Here's a tremendous goal by Stoke. Look at this, you know, bicycle kick, blah, blah, blah. Some kind of crazy, wild goal that would make Keith want to show up. But Dalton's, I'm going to put that in Dalton's hands. You've got to keep him updated on that.
I will say, I believe Rich Donnelly, the other WSAZ sports anchor, Charlie Adam had that 60-yard goal against Chelsea last season. I believe we ran that. So Stoke does have a history on WSAZ. I guess it's up to Arsenal now. Who knew I would say that?
Yeah.
That Stoke has actually been placed above the Arsenal and something like that. But, you know, that's okay. We'll just take our beautiful goals as we will and let Stoke get the Hail Mary.
The rise of the Potters. The rise of the Potters. Feel it. I can feel it.
Dalton, got a question for you, and as well as Tim. Dalton, favorite player for Arsenal and why, and Tim, favorite player for Stoke and why?
I'll take this one first. You know, he's only been here a couple years, but the way that Alexis Sanchez has just completely re-energized this club. I'm sure you guys, if you didn't, I'm sure you saw the highlights of their match versus Manchester United this week.
Don't want to talk about it.
That's fine.
Moving on.
Actually, I'd love to talk about it. But just, you know, his effort, you can see it. Even if you're not a fan of Arsenal in particular, you just have to love his work ethic and his skill. The two goals he had, the back heel and then the 20-yard shot on Sunday were just sublime. So I just, Alexis Sanchez, for all he's done for the club in the past, you know, 2 years, can't be understated.
Okay, so since I know hardly anything about Stoke, except I think their uniforms are cool, I've got to say that Ryan Shawcross is very cool, because he'll talk to the media at any question at all, he's going to answer it. If you see them interview anybody, it's going to be Ryan Shawcross. So I'm like, oh, that's cool. That guy's actually, you know, he's very open to being able to deal with people like me. So I like them for that reason.
Okay, one last question before we let you guys go. Dalton, how outraged were you when Diego Costa assaulted Cuscione and Gabriel?
Yeah, you mentioned not wanting to talk about things. I would like to move past that. Although I believe the FA made it perfectly clear that Diego Costa was definitely in the wrong in that situation. I mean, I don't know if there's any Chelsea fans among us here, but to just see the callous and with malice the way that he went after Gabriel and Cost, it was just, it's appalling. I'm glad there's finally been disciplinary action taken against him. His natural ability is great, but, you know, it's something that we get all the time with Diego Costa, and at least he'll be serving some time on the bench for his actions.
So that's a yes, you are upset about that?
Yes, that's correct.
Very right. Political, Dalton, right there.
Dalton Hammonds and Tim here from WSAZ explaining why in the world there are two Stoke City fans in Huntington, West Virginia. Thank you so much,
there
guys, for joining us.
Hey, thanks for having us on.
Thanks for asking.
Well, we're going to step aside for our final break of the program. When we come back, we'll talk about a little bit more MLS and some of the international stuff coming up in the next couple weeks in Europe. That's coming up next on 88.1 WMUL.
And now the sound you've all been waiting for. The one, the only, WMUL.
Yeah, I knew Joe. He was a friend of mine. Always liked him. We used to hang out, you know. I noticed he started acting different. You know, keeping to himself more, not eating right. His grades even began to drop. I thought it was just because he and his girlfriend had just broken up. I mean, it seemed natural. And I never thought that Joe would be the type to...
On an average day, 84 people die from suicide, and many more attempt to end their lives. If you, or someone you know, is having trouble eating, sleeping, or has started talking about suicide, tell someone or get them help. Don't let your friend say goodbye. This message brought to you by your friends at WMUL.
You're listening to the student broadcast voice of Marshall University, WMUL-FM, Huntington, West Virginia.
Final segment of this evening's FC 88.1 here at 88.1 WMUL in Huntington and online at marshall.edu/WMUL. Braxton Crisp, Tyler Praley, and Alec Cotabato here. Got the guests from Marshall Women's Soccer joining us at 7 for Sports View. So you can do an hour and a half, actually, of soccer talk. Tyler, let's talk some about Major League Soccer playoffs real quick. As the playoffs are coming up, just a few games in hand for these teams. Who do you think has the better shot of getting into the playoffs? San Jose, currently 3 points out of the fifth spot in the West, or Montreal, 4 points out of the fifth spot in the East?
I really like Montreal just simply because of Didier Drogba. I really think that here towards the end of the season, he's going to be, you know, clinical finishing as always in the 18. And I really think that he is going to, just as he did at Chelsea for, you know, the Premier League and the way he led them to titles up top, I really think he's going to do the same thing here towards the end of the season for Montreal.
And I end up throwing another team in there too because I didn't realize they were actually that close in the points. That Portland is actually on 44 points as well as San Jose. but has a -5 goal differential. So get those three, Alec. Montreal, San Jose, or Portland?
I'm going to go Montreal because Montreal seems like the dark horse of it all, plus they've got Drogba. And granted, they lost to Orlando City in the last matchup. They've still got things going for them. They have a great opportunity tonight against the Red Bulls. Where is the game in tonight? Is it in New York?
Let me double-check real quick. It is in New York. It's at Red Bull Arena.
Okay, I was going to say if it was at Montreal, it would be an even better opportunity. But regardless, you get a chance to get – this is like a playoff game for the Impact. If you make the playoffs, you're eventually going to have to face off against New York. So it's a great opportunity. I like Montreal.
Here's the kicker, though. Three of Montreal's final four games are on the road. At New York tonight, next Wednesday night – actually, no, this weekend – on a Saturday, they'll be at Colorado. Then the following Saturday, they'll be at New England before they wrap up the season at home against Toronto, which very well could decide who the fifth team in the East is. Out West, like I said, Portland and San Jose are right there. Does Chris Wondolowski have enough to at least give his team a chance here?
I think he does. I mean, yeah, things going for him. He did a lot, wonders for the United States. He's still doing wonders for them. I think it'll give him a chance.
Tyler, does Chris Wondolowski give the Earthquakes a reasonable chance?
Honestly, he's just been so kind of hit and miss over his career, to me at least. I really don't know here at the end of the season like what he's going to look like. Hopefully he's on form for them, yeah.
That's a reasonable point, simply because everyone says he's such a great goal scorer in the MLS. Gets to the national team and does nothing. I've yet to see him do anything.